At least 15 people are now known to have died after heavy rain caused flash floods in the northeast of the United States. President Biden has blamed global warming for the extreme weather. And ABBA have announced that they're releasing their first album for 40 years. BBC News.
With Seb Soans. There's a mix of comedy and documentary next as Dr. Phil Hammond shows how humour and laughter are vital coping mechanisms in the NHS. He speaks to porters, patients, cleaners, cardiologists, visitors, volunteers, managers and medics, and then performs some stand-up. Dr. Phil's bedside manner is after this.
On BBC Radio 4, Bill Nye is the actor come amateur sleuth, Charles Paris.
First time in the West End.
Actually, it is.
With a part in a play beset by real-life tragedy.
No.
What do you mean, no?
You're starting to do a thing. It was a fatal accident, end of story.
What if it wasn't an accident?
Makes you think.
This was clearly a new sensation.
We're all walking a knife edge.
No cliché left unturned.
Charles Paris, A Deadly Habit on BBC Sounds and Radio 4.
I forbid you to get involved.
Forbid?
I mean it, Charles.
Starting tomorrow morning at 11:30.
Well, now on Radio 4, the doctor and comedian Phil Hammond continues his journey around the country, revealing the frank, funny and sometimes poignant stories of day-to-day life in the NHS, as Birmingham City Hospital is now the stage for Dr. Phil's bedside manner.
Lovely people of City Hospital Birmingham, please pop your pants down halfway, turn onto your left-hand side, draw your knees up to your chest, take a few deep breaths and prepare to be healed by Dr. Phil! Thank you. Gosh, are we happy to be here. It's just a wonderful vibe you have in this hospital. It's almost like a family, slightly dysfunctional family at times, I must say. But never have I been in a hospital where you've had generations of people who work here, family who work here, people who stay here for 30, 40 years. So something very special you have. I'm travelling around the NHS, all over the place, having intimate chats with patients, with carers, with staff, with volunteers. And then sort of as a thank you at the end of it, I try to make you laugh. And not easy laughing at the moment in a pandemic, in a very stressful job. But of course, laughter is the best medicine, unless you have syphilis, in which case it's penicillin. Actually, while we're on that subject, how many people here have had a sexually transmitted infection? Put your hand up, let's all bond. Don't be shy now. Don't be shy. Come on. Goodness me, hands up, everyone. Almost all of you. How about that? Almost all of you. That is the beauty of rain. Of course, if you haven't had chlamydia by the age of 25, you haven't been trying hard enough. I was actually talking to one of these sexual health consultants up here in Birmingham who, for some reason, didn't want to be interviewed. But I said, what's traffic been like during lockdown? Because we're all supposed to be in our bubbles. Presumably, nobody's been coming into the sexual health clinic. He said, no, actually, we've seen exactly the same number of people. It's interesting, isn't it? And I said, well, what do you say to people? You say, well, you try to have safe sex in a pandemic. If people are still going to go outside their bubble and have sex, try to have safe sex. I said, well, how do you do that? You say, well, try to do a safe position. I said, what's the safest position in the pandemic? Apparently, it's the wheelbarrow. The wheelbarrow position. Anyone try that? No, it's the wheelbarrow. But it's like you used to do as you were kids, only nobody wears any clothes. The bloke goes at the back, usually. And if you've got fairly good upper body strength, you can go for miles. You can go for absolutely miles. Now, delighted to be joined by Jo Mansell, clinical practitioner in ophthalmology, running the vaccine service in cardiac rehab, if ever there was multitasking. So what were you doing before the pandemic struck? What does a clinical practitioner in ophthalmology do?
I provide the sight-saving injections, and the service continued throughout the whole of the pandemic.
But it has been a real challenge, hasn't it? Because we've sort of become a COVID service, and yet there are still people getting detached retinas and life-threatening conditions and cancer and things that need treating. So you've managed to do it in this hospital, have you, to keep the non-COVID care going?
We have, yes. Yeah, we have, especially within the eye hospital. You know, it's a centre of excellence. We have a lot of patients come from all over the country.
You are, and you're now allowed to hug each other. You went for ages not being able to, because NHS staff are quite huggy, aren't they, generally? I know you're saying, don't hug me, Dr. Phil, I can see that.
I don't hug anyway.
Really?
So I was quite pleased with the no-hugging thing.
Have you never hugged anyone, Jo, in your entire life?
I have, but I'm not one of these huggy-huggy people.
So tell us some of the things that have made you laugh over the years, either training in surgery or whatever.
The one thing that makes me laugh is my colleague's actual real laugh. She's got such an infectious laugh.
What's her name?
Mary.
Now, Mary.
Mary.
Says Mary Parker, lead nurse, Sandwell Vaccination Hub. How are you, Mary?
I'm all right, thank you.
What is it about your laugh, Mary?
Well, I've been told it's contagious and infectious.
Okay.
So, stand back.
See what I mean?
And it cheers people up.
That is more infectious than COVID, I can tell you. That's
we haven't got a vaccine for Mary's laughter yet, though.
No.
Jo's been in the NHS quite a long time, as have I, and I guess of you.
Yes.
Do you think it's become a less fun place to work?
It's all according who you're working with, I think.
Okay.
For me, it hasn't. I still laugh frequently because I'm the falls prevention specialist nurse in my day job.
Okay, so tell us.
Well,
can you prevent somebody falling over using laughter, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, okay. No, you can't.
It's a huge issue, isn't it? Because if you can avoid falling when you're elderly, or you're fit enough to get up if you do fall, that's pretty much you sorted, isn't it? The number of people whose lives start to go downhill once they fall. So falls prevention, very unsexy, unglamorous, probably the most important thing the NHS does, along with leg ulcers, do you not think?
Definitely. Yeah. Because if you do fall and you have a serious injury, a third of those patients will die within the first 12 months.
Wow.
And also, because of COVID, because people have been stuck in home, especially the elderly, because they're too frightened to go out, they've become deconditioned.
Yeah.
So now that they're being told they can go out, obviously they've got muscle wastage.
Wow.
So I think the amount of falls, well, I have noticed an increase anyway, but I think that is even going to get higher, the amount of falls.
Okay, last thing, Mary, and this is really important. Jo said, I'm quite shy, but the one thing I've always wanted working in this hospital is a hug from Mary. She's the best hugger.
Joe's not a hugger. I am.
You're a hugger?
I'm a hugger, but Joe's not a hugger.
My name is Tim Hebbett. I'm an advanced nurse practitioner. I work in primary care. Comedy and humour runs right through the core of the NHS. It's the absurdity and the ridiculous things that we have to do. I used to do clinics and invariably you'd see somebody, you've met them literally seconds ago, complete stranger, and you'd say to them, can you just take all of your clothes off, please, and I'll just prod and poke your intimate areas. And that is ridiculous. And the only
there aren't many jobs that allow you to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is preposterous. And the only way you really get through all of those things is by actually just having a bit of a laugh and a joke with people at the right moment.
Yes.
My first job, I worked in oncology inpatients, which...
So cancer?
Cancer, right. Yes. Which, not... firsthand sounds like it's going to be really funny, but actually I laughed the most in that job that I've ever done. It's not just the absurdity, there was something else going on there that I've carried through my entire career. The fact that cancer patients and anybody going through any sort of life-changing or life-limiting illness and disease, they're being really strong. They're being really strong for themselves, they're being really strong for family and friends and children and loved ones. And they kind of lose themselves and they become this cancer patient. Mm. And the beauty of being on an inpatient cancer ward is that all of those people that they're being strong for go home.
Right.
And they're there. And through the humour, because you're still laughing and joking with them, they kind of reconnect with themselves in a really quite wonderful way. And they stop being a cancer patient and they start being Barbara and John again, and it's quite a beautiful thing that humour was able to allow them to reconnect with the person that they were before they got their diagnosis.
Doors opening.
Hi Phil, my name's Richard Morin. I'm a consultant haematologist and I've been working at SWBH now for 17 years as a consultant.
17, golly.
Where I can bring that individual touch to bear, it's often through just having a shared sense of humour. But also there are times where the comedy part of my brain develops a bit of Tourette's, and there have been occasions where my brain has made up a joke and I've said it without really wanting to.
Yeah.
So for example, there was a very irate patient who was frustrated at not being told how low his platelet count needs to be to allow a circumcision. And in the heat of him having this tirade against me, he said, well, come on, he said, what does my platelet count need to be? And I said, well, we'd have a cut-off value of 70.
Did he see the funny side of that?
He didn't, no.
So you have to pretend you weren't making a joke. That's what I do with my jokes when they fall flat.
Well, the other one, which was perhaps more scary at the time, was when I had a prisoner patient who was shackled to two guards. He looked fearsome, but he was referred because he was having frequent chest infections.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked me square in the eye and said, I want you to tell these guards I need a warmer cell. And I said, well, I'll get them to put a few extra bars on. And he didn't like that either.
No.
So I'm just going to tell you one mistake I made as a junior doctor. This lovely woman, she said, "I'm really sorry, doctor, to call you at night, but my husband, he's pissed again. He's fallen up the stairs and he's broken his knee." Now, I was never any good at orthopedics. I was never good at the manual stuff. But I remember going to a lecture saying people generally don't break their knee. What they normally do is dislocate their patella. 3 o'clock in the morning, I get to the house, and the wife opens the door for me. The husband is indeed pissed. He's fallen up the stairs. He's screaming in pain, and his kneecap is round the side of his knee. And I think, fair enough, I've made the right diagnosis. And so I send the wife off to make a cup of tea, because I don't like people watching while I'm winging it. You know the feeling there. It's terrible, isn't it? It's terrible. People bloody scrutinising your work while you're winging it. And I've probably got this wrong. If anyone's trained in orthopaedics, I apologise. But it was sort of playing the knee a bit like an accordion and nurdling the kneecap or whatever. And I sort of did something right. And suddenly I actually heard it go like that. And this kneecap popped into place. Absolutely beautiful. Perfectly functioning knee. I felt absolutely proud of myself. Thank you very much. That's the first dislocated patella I've ever done. Big round of applause to Dr. Phil. I was also expecting a round of applause from the patient, who'd finally stopped screaming. I went down to look at him, and the bugger had died on me. He died. It's not funny, Mary. He died on me. So here's what probably happened. He had chest pain. He had a cardiac arrest on the stairs. On falling on the stairs, he dislocated his knee. I was so obsessed, because the wife, I do as much cardiopulmonary resuscitation as I can, and he's gone. Wife comes back with a cup of tea. She says, "How is he?" And I says, "Well, his knee is absolutely lovely. The rest of him, not so good." I was only a GP trainee. I thought that was my career over. I was absolutely devastated by that. And after about 3 weeks waiting for the lawyer's letter to come, I get a card. And it said, "Dear Dr. Hammond, thank you so much for coming to the aid of my late husband a few weeks ago. I appreciate it was a very difficult situation, but I know that you tried your best." Isn't that lovely? Isn't that lovely? And then it said, "As luck would happen, my husband had really good life insurance. I've been able to pay off the mortgage and purchase a modest apartment in Mallorca." So even the darkest clouds can have a silver lining.
My name's Mary Causer, bracketed Reverend, and I'm the lead chaplain for the Sandwell and West Birmingham Hospital Trust.
When you say lead chaplain, there are loads of chaplains here.
Yes, there are. Okay. Multi-faith team.
Describe this wonderful chapel we're in.
Okay, this is about 100 years old.
Okay.
And it is full of stained glass windows. We've got a beautiful icon at the front over the altar of Mary and Jesus and a dove over the top. It's a typical original hospital chapel.
Okay. How long have you been a chaplain for?
Well, I've actually been a chaplain for 20 years.
In hospital?
No.
Okay.
I worked for HMP.
Prisons?
Yeah. In Strangeways for 16 years.
Oh, my word.
And
how does that compare to the NHS?
Well, the staff are quite similar.
I mean, making people laugh in adversity, I often say, I mean, we do amazing things in hospital, but sometimes we just disguise the inevitability of death. And
I talk about it quite often.
We're not very good at talking about it. Is it just British people? We don't like talking about sex or depression or death. Or generally, do humans struggle?
I think British people like talking about sex. I think you're wrong.
Okay. Well, they like talking about Matt Hancock sex, not necessarily their own.
My name is Lauren Wood, and I'm the mortuary services manager at Sandwell and West Birmingham Hospitals. We still treat them as patients until they leave our care. Just because they've passed away does not mean they're still not a patient that we look after with the same level of care and dignity as on a ward. It's just our patients are a bit quieter. Here in the mortuary, it's absolutely important to have a sense of humour. None of that humour is ever against patients. We work in an extremely hard environment, physically and mentally. We see some horrific things, and it's important to give you that well-being space for myself and staff, that we have that moment and times in the day where we can just laugh, where we can relax, where we can let ourselves go and not let what we're seeing on a day-to-day basis affect us. Otherwise, I think it could be quite destroying. So we are quite a light and bright environment, and we do encourage that with our staff, so that we are smiling, we are happy, we joke with each other. One of our members of staff will sing happy birthday to every patient that comes in if it's their birthday. And we do it because it's a part of, they are our patients still, like I emphasised. Just because they have passed away, they should not have the care, you know, that is entitled to everybody within the trust.
My name is Malcolm Robinson. Just over 4 years ago, I dropped down in the street my good luck is a passing motorist who was a nurse who'd worked at the old National Heart Hospital in London.
A cardiac rehab nurse, wow.
Came along, saw a crowd standing around me with my feet sticking out on the pavement, stopped the car and took over, phoned the ambulance and got onto CPR.
She did the cardiopulmonary resuscitation the days when we... Did she have a mask or did she do mouth-to-mouth?
She didn't do mouth-to-mouth at first, but then she saw me going so blue that she did. I did look into the whole statistics of survival realised how incredibly lucky I had been and decided I must do something about this to try and put something back into the system.
To help people recognise and treat cardiac arrest and heart attack when it occurs outside hospital on the street. So what have you done?
Well, with the help of the Chief Resuscitation Officer for Birmingham Community Healthcare, NHS Trust, we've been running courses right up till COVID stopped us and we've trained 900 people.
So your consultant's arrived as well. He cycled here all the way to
see
you.
He looks warm.
He does look warm, doesn't he? Very fit.
I've just cycled in. I was on call last night.
Hi, so I'm Derek Connolly. I'm a consultant interventional cardiologist here at Birmingham City Hospital. I'm also the Director of Research and Development. And I was in part responsible for my friend Malcolm being here.
In your particular line of work, you actually save some lives, don't you? You actually add years to life and quality of life.
Well, that's the plan, and clearly that's what, in general, we do. So it's fantastic. It's absolutely wonderful. You don't win every battle, but you win a lot of them.
I mean, I know he had luck and someone was on site, he knew what they were doing, but what's the chances of collapsing in the street and having a good recovery from a cardiac arrest?
Historically, we used to say 4% in the UK from arresting in the street to going home. I think we've got the figures up as we train more and more people to do CPR. And Malcolm clearly is pushing it, but the idea of everybody being trained to do CPR is a phenomenal one, and we should be doing it. Anybody that wants to learn about it, there are fantastic videos online now, and there are lots of courses. Malcolm runs a course, but there are lots of courses around the country.
Now, when you were training, was there any tune that you used to do cardiac resuscitation to? So we used to do Nelly the Elephant, the theme from The Archers, Staying Alive.
You're 100% right, and Staying Alive is still the one I do. Okay. Well, I hear Staying Alive playing when I'm doing it.
Right, because often when people do it, they do it too slowly, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is quite energetic. So if there are several people around, get people to take turns. The truth is, we live in very tense situations. And the right way, especially with the team in the cath lab, is to laugh all the time. One of the things we do is we put on music. It's amazing when the music comes on, which songs the patients shouldn't really be listening to. Another one bites the dust.
Me,
Hammer to Fall are the green ones.
Okay,
Stairway to Heaven.
Do you still regularly laugh at work?
Oh, if you didn't laugh, it wouldn't work.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nick McQuarner. I'm a consultant paediatrician at City and Sangwell Hospital.
And tell us about your dance-a-thon. So this is something you're renowned for. You have your own YouTube site. Have you always been a dancer, right, from medical school onwards?
So I've never had any professional training in dancing. Right. But
I've never guessed from your video.
I've really enjoyed dancing. Okay. And then we were trying to work out how to raise money for the Trust charity.
Okay.
I wanted to do something for children in need. And I'm a professional member of the Encephalitis Society. So I really wanted to think about how can I raise money in a fun way that is not just about doing something myself, but bringing other people together with it.
Just you dancing for 12 hours, or did you have support?
It started with just me,
okay. And
I think people walking through the foyer of the hospital going, what is going on here? Because it's very bizarre. You're a patient coming to a hospital or a doctor coming to work.
You were dancing in the foyer?
I was dancing in the foyer of the hospital.
Did anyone direct you to the movement disorders clinic?
Well, it's interesting.
This chap looks to be, he's got
a
bit of a problem there.
Because the psychiatric hospital's next door, and I was worried if they thought one of the psychiatric patients might have got loose. I think the fun of it, the joy of it, people then start joining me. So we got one or two on, and by the end, we had a whole dance floor full.
As in patients, relatives, other staff, anyone?
Patients, relatives, other staff. As people coming through on the stretchers, they were moving their arms along with the music.
Did you plan that?
No.
I have to say, I'm not surprised that people joined in. Purely from the conversations we've had around this hospital, there's a real sense of communal spirit here, isn't there?
Definitely.
People, there's a real affection.
My name is Richard Beacon. I am the interim chief executive of Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust.
This is an amazing hospital. What's really interesting is that the people here, there are people here who have been here for 25 years, and their family work here, and the culture is really one of compassion and humour.
We spend too much time at work not to have fun. Good. And sometimes, particularly over the last year, as you can imagine, things have got a bit heavy and a bit intellectual and a little bit serious. And humour of any kind within the appropriate tolerances should be deployed.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to cheer your staff up today in the theatre, so if you're free there. Are you going to be there?
I will be there.
You sit in the front row, Richard, because you look like a giggler.
Yeah, I'm a giggler. I'm also somebody who can be picked upon for cheap laughs, if that's what you wish.
That's very kind of you to say so. Thank you, Richard. I'll bear that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you.
The only people who know what happens in healthcare is people on the front line. So my people's plan for the NHS is to go around all these NHS hospitals we visit, and as well as hearing your stories, I ask for your suggestions on how to improve the NHS. So here are some that I've had. Here were the top two suggestions, so I want you to see if you vote them in. A nurse's uniform typically costs over £100. However, you can buy one in Ann Summers for £19.99. And it's wiped down. This from a paramedic, it's interesting because the paramedics and the ambulance crew aren't employed by the same trust, and they have brilliant stories, but we weren't allowed to interview them. But I did ask one paramedic what would improve the NHS, make life better for him, and he said, change the number for calling an ambulance and don't tell anyone. Those in favour say aye. That would be a clever one, wouldn't it?
My name's Dermot Riley, and I'm a senior nurse in ED at City Hospital.
So ED is the emergency department?
Oh, it is.
How long have you worked there for?
I've worked here for 24 years, and I've worked in ED for 34 years. Scary.
34 years. Some people don't read the sign above the door that says emergency department and turn up with things that aren't quite emergencies. Give me some examples.
Oh, loads of things. I mean, the weirdest thing, back in the previous hospital in Leicester, a woman turned up because her perm had fallen out of her hair. And so she felt something was wrong with her hair, and we could medically fix it.
At the beginning of the pandemic, some people are saying emergency departments suddenly got very quiet, and people weren't even coming in with heart attacks. Did you notice that, or were you busy all the way through?
Yeah, fell off a cliff. It was really noticeable. I mean, we see 350 a day, and then it was down to 300, 250, 200.
And were you thinking, where have all the heart attacks and strokes gone?
So it was a little deceptive, and you felt a little bit guilty. And I really felt for our colleagues in some of the wards in ITU, who were 24/7, full PPE.
Yes.
Hard work, really hard work.
And then there were loads of deaths at home, because people didn't, for whatever reason, too frightened to use the NHS.
And it was clear, the media made it clear, the press made it clear, the stats are making it clear. People weren't coming to A&E.
Yeah.
They weren't being less ill.
Can I have a quick chat? What's your first name?
Roberta.
Roberta. So tell us, Roberta, why are you sitting out here outside the emergency department?
I've hurt my leg somehow.
And what have you done to it? Can you remember?
No idea.
What, you just woke up and it was hurting?
Pretty much, basically, yeah.
And you look in pretty reasonable health generally. How would you say you are overall?
Looks can be deceiving.
Well, is that you?
Yeah.
You've been caught. Even better. Even better. Lovely to meet you. Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you very much.
Fingers crossed that leg's okay.
Thank you.
You take care.
Hi, I'm Celicia.
And why have you come up here today, Celicia, to the emergency department?
I've got a little personal problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
The kind of thing you don't want to chat to somebody on the radio about. You're thinking, why has he come up here and talking to me about that?
Thank you.
And generally, what are your feelings about the NHS?
Do
you think it's doing a good job in the pandemic?
Yeah, I think it's been fine. I mean, I work for the NHS myself, so...
Oh, funny. What do you do?
Patient care advisor, booking appointments, faxing to GPs, hospitals, deal with gynaecology, dermatology, ophthalmology, ultrasound and minor surgery.
But you seem to laugh a lot. Is that how you get through stressy times?
I'm just a happy person.
Always happy?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think it's the best medicine, do you not think?
Of course. You've got to stay happy. If you don't stay happy, then things will just drag you down.
Thank you for taking the time.
It's okay, no worries. Thank you. Take care.
So my name's Lisa Gill and I'm the Volunteer Service Manager here for Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust.
So what does a Volunteer Service Manager do?
Absolutely everything and anything.
No. So one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you is we don't think volunteers get the credit they deserve. We do shows about hospitals, it's always about the doctors and nurses, and it's never or very rarely about the volunteers. So tell us about the crucial role they play.
I've got to say, we're one trust, and I'm not just saying it because, you know, our leadership may be listening, but we do actually value the volunteers that we have at our trust.
The leadership is listening, by the way, so just as well you said that. Security will come and remove you if you say anything you shouldn't.
Absolutely.
I say to all young people, if you're not sure what to do, volunteer.
Yeah.
So kids sit at home and they stare at their screens and they get all anxious comparing themselves to other people. I say, forget about that, go and volunteer. And I'm patron of a charity based here in the West Midlands called Kissing It Better. where they send young people into hospitals and into care homes. And it's extraordinary, the benefits, not just to the people they're caring for, but the young people's development. And I've seen kids who've volunteered speak at conferences who have brilliant self-confidence that has been gained through volunteering in public services and learning how to chat to people of any age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anthony Edwards, legendary catering assistant and proprietor of the shop down the corner.
Wonderful. Tell me, Anthony, were you born in the NHS?
I was born in the car park of this actual hospital.
Really?
Yeah, my mother couldn't make it to the maternity ward. And as a tribute, my dad called me Pie and Display. And my sister was called Pick Up and Put Down, only first 15 minutes free.
It's an important role you see yourself in, cheering people up and chatting to them and mentoring and counselling them, as well as selling them some grub.
This is it, this is it. I'm making a couple of pennies on the side, which is always helpful, isn't it?
Going round, people have often said, I find it really hard to tell stuff to the doctor, sometimes the nurse, because they're so busy. So they tend to offload to the cleaner or the catering assistant. So do people tell you fairly heavy stuff?
Yeah. All that I've been going through during the day and what's happened. And a lot of doctors come up and ask for advice, and I give them advice like, you've got your stethoscope on the wrong way around, he's not dead.
Is that the junior doctors? Because they all start on August the 1st and they don't know what they're doing.
It's great because I come into the shop on the first day and I go, can I have a coffee, please? And 2 weeks later, it's, Sam, get us a coffee, my usual.
Oh, that's nice. But you teach them how to be doctors, do you? You train the doctors here? Is that what you're claiming?
I do my very best.
So tell us what you sell in your shop, because there are some people who say we should never have a donut on an NHS hospital, and there are others who say when you're really stressed and anxious, you need a sugary snack.
A little sugar boost, that's what you need. A little sugar boost. And Mars bars are the most important, because they're not selling very well, and we've got to get rid of them.
Oh dear. Do people generally take them orally?
Well, that's getting more exciting by the minute, this interview, is. I like it.
Well, it's called patient choice. It's called patient choice, isn't it? So you don't, nobody said to you, I'm sorry, Tony, but now on you can only sell carrots and sticks of broccoli. You still have
we,
some...
We have like the drinks are all sugar-free, sugar or no sugar. Okay.
Now, you are a very funny man, Tony, so clearly an important part of the establishment here. But in your other life, you're part of a comedy double act, is that right?
Oh, yes. The Boys from the All Night Chemist comedy duo.
Is that a bit of a throwback to Radio 4 Round the Horn?
It certainly is. Old Sandy and Julian, I was always at the All Night Chemist.
And what sort of things? Do you sing and do banter? What's your shtick?
Mainly comedy songs.
Okay. Please welcome Tony, half of the legendary Boys from the All Night Chemist.
Some people like a beautiful sunset, Mona Lisa's smile. Walking hand in hand with the one that they love, the birth of a baby child. But not me, not me. I love doggy. If you've never done it, then you'll never know. Still looking into a car window, watching two people that you don't know. That's doggy. Sitting in the woods on a Saturday night, waiting for the flash of a car headlight. Then you'll know that the time is right to go dogging. And there is nothing that will take the place of the thrill of coming face to face with two perfect strangers on Canada Chase. We're all dogging. And it really is a beautiful thing when you see two people doing beautiful things. Then the windows steam up and you can't see a thing. The windows steam up and you can't see a thing when you're dogging in.
Thank you. Thank you to wonderful Tony from the kiosk. Give him a special round of applause. We'd love to stay and entertain you further, but Tony and I have an appointment up at Cannock Chase.